Atheist Nomads, episode 315. Not all Christians are bad.
The podcast you're about to listen to includes cursing and talking about hoo-haws. Please be advised.
Welcome to another episode of Atheist Nomads. I am Dustin. Joining me is Lauren.
Hello.
At least for a few minutes. And we have Gary Mitchell back.
Ahoy, ahoy.
Gary from Idaho Atheist, not the Gary who became a god on Star Trek.
Slightly different guy.
Yeah, yeah. The different Gary Mitchell.
He doesn't have nearly as bad eyesight.
Yeah, my eyes are not nearly that shiny.
Although, I would love to have my eyes be that shiny. That would be cool.
They probably have contacts for that.
That would probably decrease your ability to see by reflecting off too much light.
I wonder if that guy was blind the whole in all those scenes because of the reflective contacts that he was wearing.
Those were reflective contacts?
Yeah.
It wasn't colored in later?
No.
Oh.
I think that's why they were always like kind of looking weird. Like their eyes were like their faces were up and they were kind of looking down. I think that's because the contact lenses were
okay.
Probably super uncomfortable.
And
Atheist Nomads, where we talk about Star Trek. I spent the day in Ontario, Oregon yesterday.
Ooh, how was that?
It was Sunday in Ontario.
Yeah.
Everything was closed by 4. Yes, we hung out at Walmart.
Now, Lauren was hanging out in Ontario while I was working.
Doing nothing.
Sitting, looking at a computer, listening to a conference call, waiting to be able to do something.
I did purchase a twerking corgi, though. So, you know, that saved the day.
I saw that. Super cute.
No, it's awful. But it's going on the auction block. If you want to buy a twerking corgi, come to Boise Corgi Fest August 17th and Morrison Park.
All right.
Boise.
Well, most of the...
1000 South Americana Boulevard.
Much of the introduction, I'm sure I have...
10 a.m. to 1 p.m. 10 a.m. to 1 p.m.
Are we cutting this entire thing out? Is
that... Yeah.
Most of the intro I've probably cut out by now. listeners, consider yourself fortunate. But we have some announcements. Erin has resigned from her co-host position.
Yep.
Just too bad. She was doing a good job.
Yeah.
She's
been...
She was the light of my life.
She's trying to make comedy work, adding the podcast on. Like, she was doing great and really enjoying it with being a regular guest rotation and then coming on just added stress. So it makes perfect sense.
And she has been working her butt off in comedy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of what you have to do to get started. And she has been doing that in spades. Like,
oh yeah.
Watching her go, she's all into it and it's pretty wonderful. She's going to do so well.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. So it's definitely, it's bittersweet.
Yeah.
Cause I definitely come to life more when she's on. Speaking of life though, I am going to bow out because I cannot cool down.
And it was 100-degree day today. And our studio/living room is the furthest space in the house from an air conditioner. So
I'm going to go chill in the bedroom.
Yep. Alrighty.
Probably watch My Little Pony because friendship is magic.
And we might be moving with this change. I'm looking at some different options on what changes to make with the show. It's not going to be anything drastic, but some minor tweaks. Whenever the dynamic changes, there are tweaks needed. And one of the reasons why we brought Erin on as a co-host was not just because the dynamic is really good, but was because it was getting super stressful having to find guests for every single week.
Yeah, it's hard. It's a lot of scheduling.
It was hard. So I'm working on some ways to try to minimize the difficulty of that. And there will be some episodes that will be late. As I get a feel for what ends up working well with taking on scheduling again, we might move the standard release date. But for the next few weeks, I would expect between Tuesday and Thursday, you can reasonably expect to see an episode. And with this, we're also going to be I'm going to try to loosen up the conversations a little bit. We're going to expand where we're getting guests from. So some of this is going to be talking to people, not necessarily for an interview, but for people who there is something current events-wise relevant to talk to them about.
Directly impacted.
Directly Twitter. Impacted in some way or something along those lines, and just tie that in.
Good idea. Yeah.
So we'll see how this works out. It's something a little bit new. It'll be fun. And don't forget, we have Camp Nomad coming up September 13 to 15. Details are available at atheistnomads.com/camp, and you won't want to miss it. Island Park, Idaho. It'll be a lot of fun, but you do need a RSVP for the address, because not all those who wander are lost, but if you don't get the address, you will be. So let's go ahead and move on to some news. As it turns out, there are Christians who are opposed to Trump's Christian nationalist agenda. And this new group has formed called Christians Against Christian Nationalism. It is a, like, the leaders of this group are leaders in Christian groups. As I'm sure you wouldn't be surprised, it's a lot of women who are leaders in more liberal denominations and traditionally black churches that are really at the forefront on this. But there are actually some white men from relatively conservative groups. Like, a number of Baptist churches are represented in this.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised to see any Baptists in there at all. But yeah, the impressive thing about this, like, so I love what they're doing, right? This is kind of the one of the kind of things that we call for a lot. Like, your group is being represented. We don't hear any opposing voices. Like, mm-hmm. And so they brought in an opposing voice. That's wonderful. And the quotes coming out are, like, they are on top of this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
They have got their talking points at least down, or they just know exactly what the hell they're doing. I'm pretty impressed. They're a very solid organization so far.
Well, and one of the things that really makes total sense with this is, and especially when you look at the fact that a lot of the leaders are not white men, is Christian nationalism, as we're seeing it portrayed by the Trump administration, is very much white men.
Yeah.
It is opposing women's rights. It's opposing minority rights. It is explicitly and actively racist. It is actively and explicitly sexist. It is bad. And so it definitely makes sense that women and leaders in the black church would be actively opposing this. But they got over 6,000 signatures in just the first couple days after launching this.
Yeah, which is impressive. And the thing I like most about this is they're more reaching out to Christianity than mm-hmm. they are politics. Like, we've seen that churches pretty much get a free pass as far as politics go, which is annoying, but they do. And they've kind of skipped that a little bit. They've not been going directly at political sources so much. They've been going after other churches and other religious figures, which is exactly what I think they should be doing.
They're going with the two-prong approach of, they want Christians who are already opposed to Christian nationalism standing up in favor of civil rights and church-state separation, which are both really good things for everyone, including white people and Christians. So it makes good sense that they'd be pushing for this, and so they're trying to get those who are in favor of that to join them, and they're trying to shame those who aren't, and to stop being bad people and making Christians look bad.
Yeah, and they've been doing such a good job on calling people out in a pretty polite way. Like, they've mm-hmm. not been over or heavy-handed in any way. They've been just like, this is not a very Christian thing to do. If you call yourself a Christian and you do this, what the hell are you really?
Now, when you translate what they're saying into plain English out of Christianese, what they're saying is, what the fuck is wrong with you, you fucking piece of shit asshole?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's basically what they're saying. And I appreciate it. It's not often we get to actually talk about Christians doing the right thing. And I definitely want to make a point of pointing out when they do something good.
Yeah. And so far they've been doing a great job with this from everything I've seen and read. Yeah.
And if this group could end up turning the tide of Christianity driving politics, it would be in our favor.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Which would be awesome.
And we've already heard, I think, people on Fox News push back against the concept. And I think somebody in the Trump administration has also had a comment about it, but I forget exactly what that is at the moment. So,
all right. And this isn't the only Christian group speaking out right now. Cathedral.org, the official website of the Washington National Cathedral, which is the home of a bishopric of the Episcopal Church, otherwise known as the Church of England, in the U.S., wrote an amazing piece called Have We No Decency? A Response to President Trump.
I mean, we know he has no decency, right? Like, I know they're framing it in the larger, like the royal we, actually with the lack of the royal we, so the collective we, I guess. But I think they're aiming it at, you know, Trump as the royal we, and no, he doesn't.
They're drawing from a U.S. Army attorney, Joseph Welch, and his response to Senator Joseph McCarthy, where he was actually able to address him on live television. And he said, until this moment, Senator, I think I have never really gauged your cruelty or your recklessness. You have done enough. Have you no sense of decency?
Yeah, classic.
And so they're echoing this with trying to call out Trump's lack of decency in treating victims of mass shootings and refugees on the border and children that are being kept in concentration camps, separated from their parents. There's a lot.
Yeah, not to mention the violence, the vitriol. But you've a person has to have shame for you to shame them into changing. And that's the problem with this. Like, it might affect his followers in some way, but it'll never affect Trump himself.
Well, and I think with both of these, it's, yeah, none of it's going to affect Trump. He's immune.
Yeah.
But if it affects the, like, if we want to have a charitable view of that 32% of the population that seems to absolutely back him no matter what, if we go kind of charitable on that, we're going to assume that that includes pretty much all evangelicals.
Yeah.
And if we assume that not all of them are horrible people, they just think he'll give them what they want. Those are people that could possibly be shamed out of backing him. Highly unlikely. I think the way Mitch McConnell has successfully polarized politics over the last 10 years has nearly guaranteed that's not going to be possible, but there's a slim chance.
Yeah. I mean, you might affect a dozen here and a dozen there, right? But what we seem to be working against as far as politics go is anger. Like, mm-hmm. You're not going to get through that anger. And I still don't understand where all of the anger sources are from. I don't know if they do either, but
yeah.
They're very angry. And in retaliation, it creates angry people too. But yeah, you're going against pure emotion versus some sense of logic. And it's not going to get through to many of those people.
Mm-hmm. But if you can turn just enough, and actually who they're probably trying to reach isn't the 32% that are diehard Trump supporters. It's the 15% that don't like the guy, who will probably end up voting for him anyway.
Yeah, trying to get across that little, not middle ground, but the ones who could put a foot in the other direction, mm-hmm. given enough push, yeah.
And elections in the U.S. for a long time have all been about who can win the middle. And we've seen in recent years, it's shifted a little bit from who can win the middle to who can inspire their base to vote. But if you can win the middle and inspire your base, you're going to win.
Yeah.
Guaranteed. But you can also try to turn, you can de-inspire somebody's base, which the Russians did a good job of in 2016.
They did.
And you can, de-inspire is not the right word, uninspire. You can also turn off the middle. And in either case, you just decrease the number of people that are coming out to vote for a particular candidate. And the best way to get Trump out of office and end the push for Christian nationalism is realistically to get people who are likely to vote for Trump to just sit out the 2020 election.
Yeah, honestly, apathy is usually who people vote for in the U.S. Now, when you've got under half the population that does vote, mm-hmm. Apathy is the vote. It's the primary vote. So yeah, if you can increase that, whoever's most passionate and has the most numbers on either direction,
mm-hmm.
that's who's been winning.
Right. 2016, Trump won because conservatives voted and Hillary lost because a lot of Democrats didn't.
Right. Or they went to a third party because they figured it didn't matter.
if you look at the actual numbers in those key battleground states that Trump won, or not battleground states, these safe blue states that Trump won, it was people who voted for Obama that just didn't vote. The third party votes didn't even matter.
Yeah, it's probably true. Yeah, Jill Stein and Gary Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, they didn't have 2% like total, I don't think. It was a very, very small number.
Yeah. And Betsy DeVos, U.S. Secretary of Education and avid supporter for privatizing schools, is pushing a new policy that is a rule that is being actively opposed by American atheists and other secular groups that ignores the normal process to allow school districts to contract directly with religious organizations for services.
Yeah, and it sounds like this one was squeezed right through without the process that mm-hmm. usually happens. I'm not super shocked.
Yeah,
she and her entire family, they want a theocracy.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're outside of money, their goal is theocracy. So,
oh yeah,
like it. She's doing her job basically.
Yeah, and so what? One of the things this would do would be it would allow school districts to contract out services like special ed to churches, and this would allow churches to, instead of being like, at least when and where I grew up, only the smartest and most capable students went to private schools, including church schools.
Yeah.
Because they didn't have the programs. Like, one of the reasons why I had such a hard time in school is because they did not have programs to either identify who's getting bullied, didn't have teachers that were competent enough to figure out who's being bullied, and they didn't have the resources available to help kids who are being bullied. We didn't have a school counselor.
No, my school, we did have a school counselor, but she was actually negatively effective.
Mm.
She has caused, in my like direct awareness, over 10 students to not graduate on time because she lied to them early on about their transcripts and which classes they needed to take to graduate.
Okay.
And yeah, so they just, you know, did what she told them to do and completely fucked them over. They had to take summer courses. Some of them just went to GEDs. Yeah, between a 5-year span, yeah, 10 kids out of like a, you know, a school of 200. So like that's a pretty large percentage of not mm-hmm. not graduating.
But when you look at public school budgets or even any school budget, typically a school of, you know, a high school that is graduating high school seniors is going to have a guidance counselor, even if that's somebody who's just a teacher who takes on guidance counselor duties in addition to teaching, which is what was the case at my high school. But aside from that, you're not going to have any of those special services
No.
at a school that small.
No.
And private schools aren't required to provide those services. So what DeVos is trying to do is make it so that public schools are, while still required to provide them, they can pay a private school to take care of these services. So instead of having special ed classes in your public school, you just contract with a church and they'll set up a couple classes where kids who don't fit in at normal public schools just get to hear about Jesus all day.
Yeah. And honestly, I think it's less about that and more about money. The cost to take care of special needs kids is really high,
mm-hmm.
and a church can get by doing nothing decent.
Oh yeah.
They really want to, and they just rake in money.
Oh yeah, definitely. And depending on how the contracts are worded and how the standards end up finally being applied as they trickle down to the districts and whatnot, there's a chance this could allow standard principles on special education to be completely skirted.
Yeah. Yeah. Churches don't have the same rules that, like public school teachers have.
Mm, depends on the state.
Yeah, you're right. There are a few states that actually do have the same requirements. It's true.
Oregon does. It was enough that for high school classes, we had to use the exact same textbooks that the public schools did because Oregon's educational curriculum is that specific.
That's actually pretty nice.
And all-inclusive. We also had homeschool kids come in to do standardized testing. And we all had to do standardized testing all the time because going to private school, the school had to be able to prove to the school district that kids were actually learning.
Yeah, and our state does not really require so much of that, it seems.
No.
They're pretty pretty lax on that.
So yeah, we'll see where this one ends up going. But probably not anywhere good. If we're lucky, you'll end up in court and get an injunction and get held up forever. But we'll see.
Yeah, I think that's probably what'll happen. It'll probably hit a couple courts, honestly.
Tiffany Fitzhenry is a self-identified best-selling author, public speaker, screenwriter, and Hollywood whistleblower. That is how she identifies herself. Whether or not that's accurate is another story. She appeared on Chris McDonald's The MC Files, where she made the claim that country music uses spells to control people. It uses musical scales that are designed to change your DNA.
I feel like my DNA is really safe on this one.
As she pointed out, that there are certain words that they have to put into the songs. They all talk about alcohol and whiskey.
Drugs.
Claims that, according to some study, 90% of country music songs in some way promote drinking. I know it's a lot. It might be 90% of what's played on the radio. I don't think it's 90% of all songs.
That does seem pretty high. I don't even know what the hell qualifies as country music anymore, to be honest. The genre makes no sense to me. What I would consider country rarely talks about drinking, but I think, yeah, the radio, the pop country, or the rural pop music, I think, yeah, probably a pretty good chunk.
Yeah. Well, and there's what tends to get played on the radio tends to be definitely, yeah, a lot more rural pop than traditional country western. I haven't listened to it in a long, long time.
Yeah, same, honestly. I mean, outside of like random bits of pop culture eking into my brain. Yeah, I've not purposely gone and looked for any country music.
I know when I went to the Grand Ole Opry in 2007, nothing caught my eye as being pushing alcohol consumption.
Yeah, I think what's at the Opry is probably a little more traditional country than rural pop, if I had to guess.
Yeah, there was definitely some of it was a little bit more on the pop side.
Was it?
Hmm. Yeah. It was a good mix of modern pop country, more classic country, and bluegrass.
Oh, okay, nice.
I was there a week before Charlie Daniels
went through. And
if I'd known that in advance, we were on a buddy and I were on a road trip through the South, and we would have, when we were up in Michigan, and I would have insisted that we flip our trip around so that we would have been at the Opry when Charlie Daniels was there, but yeah, that didn't work out.
I did see Charlie Daniels in concert when I was in my early teens, I think. Mm. He was playing our local fair, which is, you know, always so sad, but the dude, I think he went through six or seven bows and three fiddles.
Oh, wow.
And it was just amazing. Like they would just shred. it was a sight to see for sure.
Wow. Yeah. I could definitely imagine him destroying instruments in the Devil Went Down to Georgia.
Oh yeah. There's like a umbrella stand full of bows, like right behind him. So he can just pick one up and grab and keep going.
Oh, that's amazing. Impressive. And also painful to be destroying your instrument.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Such a beautiful instrument on top of that. Yeah.
But Fitzhenry went on to say there is, and quote, there's a frequency that is sort of the God frequency. And then there is a frequency that is just sort of off from that. Our scale of modern music is off from the real resonance. It's just a scale down. We don't realize it, but all of our music is tainted in this way. And sound has a powerful influence, a powerful effect on our bodies, on our minds. We're 75% water, so when something reverts through you, it changes your DNA, end quote.
Okay, so she's got some pretty terrible science in there, but I feel this is kind of like back in the day when LPs were played backwards and you heard demonic voices, shit like that. I feel like that's kind of the same thing as what she's pushing right here.
So we already talked about private schools, and like some of the things I learned about in private school is how basically all popular music since about 1850, when Beethoven was wrapping up his career, has been demonic.
Right. Yeah.
And,
I can see that.
But all that good old music, that was the classic stuff. That was all good because they were all writing in the name of God, and it's all good, holy Christian music with it uses the right scales that with the right resonance that works with our natural bodies to help promote good spiritual well-being, while modern stuff is off from that and it disrupts your natural spiritual well-being by taking you out of tune with God. She's trying to scientify it with not how well the music tunes you for God, but instead, no, she's claiming that modern music uses a scale. Yes, some songs do include scales, but not all do. That is ionizing radiation.
I think she should hear Inna Gutta Davita on an organ, on a pipe organ. I think it would change her entire thought process on this. But yeah, she's obviously pretty batshit insane. I mean, she's using some kind of classical Luddite style.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this new thing, quote unquote new, is killing us, destroying us, whatever. When obviously there's no science behind it whatsoever, of course.
Right. Yeah.
It kind of a classic Luddite mentality.
Yeah.
I don't know where she gets the, or what she feels is the God frequency or the God scales, but I don't know if they're the classical ones or if they're just something that she made up.
It would be Beethoven, Bach, Mozart.
All pretty impressive.
Those were all the God scales, and everything since then has been off from that.
I mean, rock and roll kind of came along and changed a few things, and blues, of course, and jazz as well. I'm reminded of the scene in the new Star Trek movie, the first one, where young Kirk is playing Beastie Boys.
Mm-hmm.
So the Beastie Boys song that he was listening to was further away from our time to his than I think Mozart was from our time to his. So like Beastie Boys was like classical music at that point, which was kind of wild. But
well, and one of the things that's kind of interesting here is if you look at where all this ends up coming, kind of an undertone with it, if you compare all music to Beethoven, Mozart, and Bach, not only are they all pre-industrial revolution, where are they all from?
Yeah, I believe I think they might have that in common a little bit.
Right. Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's a good point.
It's all Germany.
Yeah.
They're all white Germans.
That's a very good point.
And rock music and modern country has gotten some definite influence. Modern contemporary country is slightly rockified. It's more descended from this pop country that or rural pop.
Yeah.
Is more descended from rockabilly than some of the more traditional origins of countries as being from folk, which was just white hillbillies playing music.
And mimicking black people's music at the time.
Rockabilly and rock come from combining folk with R&B.
Yeah.
You combine the music of white hillbillies and black hillbillies, and you get something new.
Yeah, and honestly, still pretty impressive.
Yeah. And so that kind of makes, it's kind of suspect when, everything modern is bad. Well, it's had influences of people of African descent.
That's a very good point. Yeah, I did not actually see the racism in there, the potential racism, but that's a very valid point.
Yeah. Yeah. Ken Ham thinks that climate change isn't worth worrying about. Yep. Even if it's real, nothing to worry about here. Even if we get massive, horrible flooding, not a problem. Because just 4,300 years ago, Noah survived the flood.
Yeah, honestly, the reason he doesn't have to worry is because he'll probably be dead before all the severe effects happen. Yeah, he's old enough at this point. But we've obviously seen how effective the Ark is today. It's gone bankrupt, so.
Yeah, and they've also suffered from flooding damage.
Yeah, right, which is, the insult to injury.
Yeah.
And I assume he's just trying to push people to the Ark concept and get people into the park. But
now, so a little bit more specifically, he said he talked about evolutionary propaganda programs, talking about David Attenborough's documentaries, said that the climate change or the climate models are inaccurate, that they haven't come to fruition. And he said, and there's been climate change in the past. Of course, the biggest climate change was the global flood of Noah's day about 4,300, 550 years ago.
that no one can show any evidence for.
Right, right. This flood destroyed the world that was and upset the climate, including creating the perfect conditions for an ice age following the flood. The world has been settling down since that flood.
And if I remember correctly, even if you melt all the ice caps, we still don't have enough water to completely flood the world. Like, it's just not a thing. There's just not enough water on the planet to actually flood us.
If we didn't have mountains, yes.
Right. Yeah, like Himalayas are not going to be flooded or underwater.
The Cascades won't even be underwater if we melt all of the ice.
Right. You'll just make a bunch of small lakes in a lot of these countries.
Idaho won't be underwater.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, we probably wouldn't be. Yeah, the Lewiston probably would be because they're right about sea level. But
yeah, Lewiston's... No, that's on the Snake. It's about 1,000 feet above sea level there.
I think it was like 200 or 300 feet. It was actually pretty low, if I remember correctly. But I could be wrong.
It's about the same elevation as Walla Walla.
Is it? Yeah, I was thinking it was lower.
800-900 feet. Walla Walla's on the Walla Walla River, not the Snake. It could be a little bit lower.
Yeah, well, and Lewiston's on the Clearwater, like Snake Clearwater confluence happens right there, so they're actually on the Clearwater.
Well, let's just look it up.
Oh, we totally could, yeah. The internet has this data. And I assume there are probably lower points in Idaho than Lewiston, but...
I think Riggins is one of the lowest.
Oh, that would make sense. That place is a hellhole. The one place I've ever heard of where they have a rodeo and a biker rally in a tiny town on the same weekend. It is such a bad idea.
745 feet.
Oh, you were really close. Yeah, that's not far from 1,000, in fact. Yeah.
And don't even need to put Washington in on that. There is no other. Walla Walla is 942 feet.
Oh, okay.
So
pretty close.
Walla Walla is almost 200. Wait, is it almost? Walla Walla is almost exactly 200 feet higher than Lewiston in elevation.
Yeah, it's wild.
Despite being both up and downstream.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's kind of ridiculous, but yeah, that's...
Yeah. Huh. Okay. That is something I'm sure is fascinating to our listeners who are not from the Intermountain region. But with... So what Ham's really saying is not only that a flood isn't anything to worry about because those can be survived, it's that the climate is still warming up from the post-flood ice age. So global warming is something to be expected.
Right. He thinks it's a non-man-made feature at this point, which he's not incorrect, but it should take 1,000 years more than where we're at.
Well, if you look at the models, we're still in an ice age. It should be colder than it is. And if anything, the temperature should be going down right now. And if we have this much carbon in the atmosphere, when we get out of this, what's supposed to be an ice age, we're fucked. Super fucked.
Yeah, I was thinking we were still in the escalating period, but you're probably right about the end of the ice age slowing things down.
And it, from a super technical standpoint, ice age versus hothouse is whether or not there is ice on the Earth. There is presently ice on the Earth, so this is technically we are still in an ice age, but in common usage, ice age refers to when you have a period of glacial maximums, which we are not in. We're at a little bit more of a glacial minimum within an ice age. I think I'm getting that all right.
That sounds about right, yeah. And one that happened like about within 30 years instead of your standard hundreds to thousands of years.
With millions, if not And I think in a couple days, out of a couple days, billions of gallons of water melting off of Greenland.
Yeah, the place is going to be tiny by the time it's all done.
It's one of the weird things that's going to happen with that. Greenland is rising. As the ice melts, that is such a large mass of ice that it dents the Earth's surface.
Wow.
As that melts, the Earth's crust is going to slowly rebound to more of a spherical shape.
That's insane.
Which should actually result in Greenland's gaining land as the ice shelf on it melts.
But taking it away from Italy, I suppose. Some of the...
No, nothing substantial like that.
No, I was making a joke about the Italy flooding, but yeah.
Mm. Yeah, well, Italy will flood. Florida will flood.
Yeah, Florida's definitely going to flood.
Louisiana will... just not exist.
Yeah, I think we should move New Orleans, honestly, if we can. It's too good to, like, just you know, disappear, we move it away from the south, I suppose, might be a good idea.
One thing that's kind of interesting is the angle that Ken Ham's going with here isn't even what I would assume to be the most logical one, which is Jesus is coming back soon. God said the earth is going to be destroyed by fire, so he's just getting us ready for it by heating up the earth.
That would make a lot more sense.
Or even going with the model of, sure, humans are fucking things up because the Bible says that humans are going to fuck things up in the end. And once we fuck it up so bad, God's just going to come and wipe it all out anyway. No, he's going with the, we're still recovering from the flood. We're still, yeah, he's saying we're still recovering from event 4,350 years ago. We're talking about something that allegedly happened 6,000 years after bread was invented. People had been drinking beer longer from the time beer was first brewed until this event supposedly occurred compared to since then.
That's wild right there. That's some good data.
It's been about 10,000 years since beer.
And we're all the happier for it.
All right, and we've covered a couple Lebanon stories. Well, at least one recently on Christians in Lebanon. Last time they were trying to keep their town from becoming any more Muslim than it already was. And now we've got a group of Christians in Lebanon getting a concert canceled.
More devil's music, I assume.
Oh, you better believe it. This is a Lebanese indie rock band, Mashru Li'ila, and they decided to go on tour through the Middle East. So nobody was surprised when they were banned from getting to perform in Egypt or Jordan, since the frontman for the band is openly gay.
Oh, damn. Yeah, that's a problem.
And their lyrics often have a lot of taboo included in them, of course, in Arabic. Dealing with gender and sexuality issues, social justice issues, which is all pretty much a FU to conservative Muslim regimes that are trying to push all those old-timey values.
Yeah, that's a paddling, as I think the Simpsons would say.
So they're expecting to have some trouble, but otherwise be fine back home in Lebanon, which is generally a relatively tolerant, pluralistic society. It's generally considered to be one of the better for free expression in the Middle East because of the pluralistic nature of their demographics and politics. But nope. Christians started threatening violence if they were allowed to perform.
Do you think is there a recent upsurge in Christian fundamentalism there?
Yeah.
Does it sound like?
Yeah. We talked about this a bit last time. Christians in Lebanon came up, and it was that they are, in 1930, Christians were a majority of the population. They're now down to a third of the population, and they are continuing to have fewer babies than Muslims are. So they are continuing to become a smaller portion of the population. They're still a large enough demographic to be able to maintain protected legal power in the country. Yes, they had a civil war over who was actually in charge in the country, since the Christians did not want to let that go. So it's now a power-sharing agreement between Christians, Sunnis, and Shiites. But when you have that much religious tension, you have a tendency to also end up having a surprising amount of tolerance. But yeah, in this case, enough Christians called up and threatened violence, often vaguely, that the festival's organizers canceled the conference or the concert. Damn. And they did release a statement about it, saying that it was an unprecedented step to prevent bloodshed and preserve security and stability.
Yeah, it sounds like it's probably a good idea to cancel. But at the same time, it's one of those things where sometimes the status quo has to be challenged a little bit. And I don't know if this is that hill to stand on or not. It depends on how real the violence, would be or is supposed to be. But yeah, I hate to see that happen in a place where I think it does sound like, a little pushback could do some good.
So yeah, this is, and there's definitely that if you're running an event and people are making threats of violence and they're credible threats, it does have to be taken into account, because if you're running an event, your primary concern is for the safety of the people attending.
Yeah.
That sucks.
It does. I mean, that could ruin pretty much any gig, right?
Mm-hmm.
Any given scenario where enough unhinged people call in mm-hmm. and try to threaten, or the same person 20 different times. Why not take that seriously when there's an actual chance? But at the same time, like, nothing would ever happen if we didn't risk sometimes. And again, like, I don't know. I assume that they know better
mm-hmm.
The scenario, but sometimes you still kind of just got to do it and see what happens.
Now, there are some people who are really unhappy about this cancellation because, well, I'm sure there's some that were just really excited to see this band play at home at a big music festival, but also traditionally, since the end of the Civil War in Lebanon, the authorities have seriously addressed threats of violence to try to keep the country stable and secure. Because after you go through a 15-year civil war, you want peace and stability.
Yeah, pretty much everyone does at that point.
And when it's religiously motivated civil war, you want everybody to back the fuck off and let people live their lives.
Yeah.
Even if it requires being a little heavy-handed in allowing that to happen. And what this kind of demonstrates, because the authorities didn't get involved, they basically just let these threats happen, which is kind of signaling that the tides have turned and the authorities in Lebanon don't care about free expression. They care about maintaining the peace, not, and using that heavy-handed approach only to maintain the peace, not to maintain the peace and protect expression.
Yeah. The hands clean kind of situation, like, not our deal. Yeah, because I, from what I know of the Lebanese police, they are actually pretty severe, or they have been in the past, and honestly, pretty damn good at their jobs too, to impose that severity. So, yeah, you're right that they would have to purposefully allow this to go mm-hmm. on and not challenge any
yeah.
threats, and say, yeah, the concert's not worth our efforts, and
yeah,
just too damn bad.
And with the amount of control they've exerted, yeah, they are saying these threats of violence are okay. The speech is not.
Right. Yeah, they're definitely giving power to one over the other.
And that's something that might be a little hard for Americans to understand because we don't live in that kind of a country, at least not yet. But yeah, that's pretty intense.
It is. I assume that it, well, it's the kind of thing where if the tides are turning in any one direction, another civil war is probably eventually going to happen again because they're not trying to keep things in check.
Mm-hmm. And at the point that you're not as concerned with speech and you're more just concerned with not having violence happen, that is definitely a little bit concerning that they would rather infringe on speech to prevent that spark for fresh major escalations.
Yeah, or even protect the people who are doing the threats.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're kind of giving them more power than
yeah.
the people
okay,
who actually want to, you know, just have a damn concert.
Mm-hmm. We've talked about India quite a few times in the last year or so with their Hindu nationalist administration, and their latest change has been criminalizing triple talaq. That is the practice where a Arab man can say talak, 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 and instantly divorce his wife. Talak means divorce in Arabic. By saying that three times to your wife, you are divorced.
Do you have to click your heels while you do this, or is it just the words?
Just the words.
Okay.
Say the magic words three times, and it's done.
Some genie shit right there.
That is the traditional Muslim divorce. Women do not have the option
right.
to
they
start
have
a divorce.
The ability. Yeah.
It's a man says talak three times and it's done. This is now criminal in India. It had already been nullified in the courts as being permissible, and now it's actually criminal.
It's a pretty big step.
The courts declared it 2 years ago in the Supreme Court, unconstitutional, saying that it did not, you know, basically that it was allowing a special legal system for Muslims that did not apply to anybody else, and recognizing the fact that if you don't have a court processing the divorce, since divorce ends up being an inherently adversarial process, there's no one to make sure that the wife and the children are taken care of.
Yeah, that was kind of my big concern there. I assume there are other forms of divorce that they can go through the state.
Yeah, it'd be through Sharia courts.
But they couldn't do it through the Indian...
Not if they did the triple talaq.
Right, right. Oh, okay, I see.
So the courts were saying, no, you actually have to go through the legal civil system.
Right, yeah.
To get that divorce. That a judge has to sign off and say, this is actually fair. Now, that all is good, that they declared it unconstitutional, said you can't do that. That's not a valid divorce. Making it criminal. I don't know how I feel about that.
That's an interesting step. Yeah, having it not recognized by the state makes sense. But having it be a criminal act seems to infringe upon some religious liberties, but...
I wouldn't even go with that statement. By making it not valid already is infringing on religious freedom.
Well, true. Yeah. It would kind of give special treatment to that religion, though, as if everyone else had to follow the state system of marriage and divorce. So if not allowing it prevents special treatment in my eyes, but...
And taking away special treatment is inherently removing liberty that you were previously granting.
Right, through their own religion, yeah.
They'd granted Muslim special privilege that has been taken away. Now, exercising that special privilege is criminal. There's a part of me that wonders if this is just a response to people not actually following it, the court ruling, and they're having to respond to conservative Muslims and be like, no, you actually have to do what the court said.
Right.
You can't do this since you're not listening and you're not taking your divorces to court. You're going to go to jail and then you get to take your divorce to court.
Yeah. Maybe it's become too much of a problem, I suppose. Yeah. I without knowing what cultural issue might be behind this, it's kind of hard to fully judge, but In a lot of cases, India has become more progressive, and in a lot of other ways, they've really not. But I don't know if this is like a progressive movement or a one that's actually trying to stifle religious.
Well, you know how we talked about Christian nationalism earlier in the show, this episode? Narendra Modi is a Hindu nationalist. He wants India to be a Hindu nation, following Hindu customs and basing their laws on Hinduism.
Yeah, so, yeah, Muslims would probably be a problem in that.
Yep.
Yeah, that one's kind of rough. Yeah, as far as which side I fall on, that one is kind of a tricky one.
Well, and it's no different than any of the other stories that end up coming up with people with countries with minority Muslim populations trying to prohibit grotesque Muslim practices.
Yeah, it's a hard thing. Yeah.
When you prohibit it, you have a tendency to keep people out of public. There is a chance of making things worse.
By going underground and...
Forcing it underground or just keeping people locked up at home.
Yeah.
Theoretically, forcing divorces to go through the legal system is a really, really good move. I have a hard time saying that criminalizing a non-legal divorce that's trying to skirt the rules, calling that a bad thing. But I have to question when it's Narendra Modi.
Yeah, so there's a subreddit on Reddit called Am I the Asshole?
Yeah.
And I think this might be one of those cases where everyone's the asshole. It might be a good thing in the end, but it probably is like a, because of the purpose behind what they're doing.
Yeah.
In the right circumstances, what they're doing could probably be completely fine. But yeah, if they're doing it for the wrong reasons, yeah, you're the asshole.
Yeah. And it's really suspect here. All right. So this last one comes from Malaysia. which we talked about last week or the week before.
Yeah, they get a lot of news.
They are doing really good at making news that catches my attention. So a new law has been proposed in Malaysia's parliament. The goal is to try to avoid rape. Okay, on his face, that sounds like a good thing. But when somebody includes a term in the name of a law, that's probably not what they're actually doing.
Yeah, it doesn't sound so much like they're trying to prevent rape. They're trying to prevent men from getting in trouble for raping.
Yep. This is a law trying to protect men from being seduced into rape. That's right. It is criminalizing the victim.
Yeah, that one's kind of... Malaysia does have some weird stuff come out once in a while. And I try not to joke about the Derek Zoolander trying to kill the Malaysian prime minister bit, but it's a weird country sometimes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They really do have some weird ideas, like a weird mix of ideas. This one, of course, is atrocious. Yeah, and it truly is blaming the victim. But the only people that get seduced into rape are rapists. And, yeah. And that should be illegal already. So
this was proposed by Muhammad Imran Abid Hamid, a member of parliament from the ruling People's Justice Party. Yeah, let that sink in. The ruling party is called the People's Justice Party.
Yeah, I'm sure justice might be another word for punishment in this case.
As a Westerner, I am trained to think people's applies to communism and justice gets tied to fascism.
Yeah, typically.
So if they have managed to merge far left-wing and far right-wing authoritarianism, that just means they're totalitarian authoritarian asswipes.
Yeah. I mean, this law alone kind of implies that.
So he is proposing a sexual harassment act to protect men. Quote, from the actions, words, and clothing of women, which can cause men to be seduced to the point that they can commit acts such as incest, rape, molestation, watching pornography, and likewise. This is important. Men need to be protected. The actions, clothing of women can seduce us into breaking the law and causing us to be charged. I ask that the minister consider this so that the men in this country are safe and the country is peaceful. End quote.
Yeah. What opinion must you have of women to think that this is okay? Like, yeah, they're obviously not anywhere remotely equal. But how evil do you have to consider women to be to think that they're just out there trying to get people to rape them? What the actual shit?
This actually goes worse than just that. He has a view of humanity such that women are foolishly forcing men into raping them. Not because they mean to, but because they're just too ignorant to not seduce men into raping them. And that men are completely powerless to not rape women.
Yeah, yeah, you're right.
This version of humanity is just that at a subconscious level, all women want raped. And at a subconscious level, all men are rapists.
Yeah, it kind of, I mean, just like the anti-gay laws, these guys... usually guys, think about gay people way more often than I do, or at least gayness way more often than I do. I think this is probably a similar case where he thinks about raping people a lot more often than he probably should.
Oh, definitely. And I would definitely assume based on this, that this guy does not have the will to restrain himself. And even that's not even fair. This guy does not have enough will to keep himself from violently overpowering a woman.
And he wants there to be no consequences for that.
Yep. You make it the victim's fault. Oh, you seduced a man into raping you. Therefore, it is your fault. You go to jail. The man is fine. He's free.
Yeah.
This could not be more grotesque.
No, it's everything that humanity has kind of... well, I guess at least Western culture has kind of pushed against as far as rape culture goes in recent years. While we're still not super far into it, I think we're gaining some ground. This flies in the face of all of that.
Yep. Yep.
And it reverses everything that has ever... Usually, rape was at least a slightly shameful thing to do.
Yeah.
You didn't harm women back in the day. That was the, you know, quote unquote, you know, at least don't do it publicly, I assume was probably their big thing. But yeah, this completely, it's even worse than the 50s.
Right, because seducing a man, okay, for another callback to my private school education. I clearly remember the day where I am sitting in class that the principal was teaching, because in a small private school, everybody has to teach classes, including the principal. And so he was teaching, I don't remember which class he was teaching, and we're all supposed to be working on stuff, and he's sitting at a table, and he's looking at pictures that a classmate who'd skipped a grade and then skipped another grade when she transferred to another school, graduating 2 years early, she sent her graduation invitation and pictures to him. And there's no reason to protect this asswipe's identity. Jesse Cohn.
That was your principal.
Sat there in his chair looking at these pictures and said, in every one of these pictures, she is braless.
Wow.
When a woman causes a man to commit adultery in his heart, she is accountable.
Damn.
Those were his exact words.
That's just dark.
Especially when you consider that just a year or two earlier, she was yearbook editor and spent lots of time alone with him in his office.
Oh, man. I mean, I think everyone's had those stories from high school-ish times of whether we knew or not, there was always stories of teachers doing things. Usually hard to prove if that was an honest claim or not, but yeah, that sounds like a bad idea in every possible way.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
He's not protecting him or her.
Nope. And then making stupid statements like that offhandedly to students.
Damn.
From the one standpoint, just the fact that he was judging a former classmate of ours verbally to us.
One of his students.
Inappropriate. The fact that he was judging a former student of his was inappropriate. The fact that he was commenting on how she was dressed was inappropriate. And the fact that he was actively sexualizing a student that he had spent copious amounts of time with alone is downright disgusting.
Yeah, that's pretty damn hard right there. I kind of hope he doesn't have a job anymore, but...
He transferred to a different school right after that.
Oh.
Bigger school.
Easier to hide indiscretions.
So from Mike via email, soon after the corndog episode, you announced Dustin Off the Degree would be getting its own platform. Any plans to follow through on that? Keep up the good work. Found AN a year and a half ago. Almost done with the back episodes. Top shelf body of work. Thank you. From Mike, Lorain County, Ohio, 65-year-old non-believer since late teens and become more vocal in the last 20 years. Thank you, Mike. I don't remember one specifically as a corndog episode, but I guess we talked about corndogs. corndogs are really good, and like they're just delicious. But yes, the plan is to spin off Dustin Off the Degree into its own podcast.
Nice.
It started out as an added segment for Atheist Nomads, and I definitely started noticing that it felt very different when you have a show that is mostly discussions and interviews that also has lectures. Discussions and interviews are similar. Lectures are not. Adding discussion to a lecture is distracting. It was quickly getting to the point where realistically, it makes more sense to record that separately, and it kind of makes sense to just make it its own thing. General Christian history from a specific angle. I will not say what it is because I have not bought the domain yet. The other idea would be going specifically through Adventist history. Which would you be more interested in? If you had one that was just about various troubled times throughout Christian history versus one about Adventist history, which would you be more likely to subscribe to for me to be doing? Let me know. Send me an email at contact@atheistnomads.com. Tweet us at atheistnomads on Twitter, or hit us up on Facebook at facebook.com/atheistnomads, or leave a message on SpeakPipe at atheistnomads.com/speakpipe. We do not have any new supporters, but you can support us at atheistnomads.com/donate via PayPal on a one-time basis, via pod.fan on a monthly basis, or via Patreon on a per-episode basis. However you want to give us money, please do. We greatly appreciate the support. It helps keep this show going and helps us survive the trying times of being parents. Gary, thank you for joining us.
Ah, thanks for having me.
And listeners, remember, not all those who wander are lost. Thank you for listening to another episode of Atheist Nomads. You can find show notes and contact information at atheistnomads.com. Follow us on Twitter at Atheist Nomads, and like us on Facebook at facebook.com/atheistnomads. Please subscribe to the show in iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcatcher of choice, and while you're there, feel free to leave us a review. Theme music is courtesy of Sturdy Fred. Until next time, this has been the Atheist Nomads.